Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we're going to review Shazam! Pet Sematary. We got a whole bunch of news to talk about, as well as what is 5D? Yeah, we'll get there. And then we're going to have our Stephen King movie battle royale. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, and Shazam!
That's the most excited he's been all year, so welcome back, John Davenport, and Amanda Sink!
Hello, hello!
Hello. How is everybody doing?
Just peachy. I'm thrilled. I'm happy. This has been a good weekend.
Wow. What drugs are you taking?
What? Yeah,
what's going on? Can I get some?
What do you got? Can you hit me up? Seriously, I don't have any money. So if I could work out favors, that's fine.
Sexual ones is his preference.
I only take favors.
No, I was actually thinking about, like, I'll give you a ride. But if you want to take it literally, then we could do that too.
Someone's giving somebody a ride.
I just said it. You can't freaking just follow it up when I just made reference to it. And then you actually say it out loud. That doesn't help.
It was still funny.
I don't think so.
It was.
I think that's when the jokes are dead, when people, like, say them after you imply them.
No. It was still funny.
We don't talk to you anymore, Amanda.
I'm out. Bye.
It's been a while. I don't remember how to do this. I do want to ask, because we haven't asked our listeners. We've been doing this for a couple weeks now. When we do news, we don't do like just three small stories anymore, three or four small stories. We kind of do a big, giant bucket of everything that happened over the past week. And then we just kind of talk about anything that really stuck in our craw. Do kids still say craw? I don't know.
I don't know that kids have ever said that.
They did, roughly the 50s. They did.
Okay.
I have video evidence. It's true. And I saw it on like Dick Van Dyke and those shows.
Okay. I trust you. I wasn't disbelieving you.
Those are modern shows. But now we do this big bucket. I'm kind of curious what listeners think. Do you prefer that? Because I think these guys do, because we kind of get more to talk about in a way. But what do you think? What do you guys think? Have we talked about this? I don't know. I drink a lot.
Are you admitting you have a problem right now?
Okay. Nobody has anything to say about it. So that's good.
We're playing chicken over here to see
who's going to speak
each other
first.
A chance to talk.
Right? I will say that it is nice to be able to talk about a whole lot more at the beginning, but I am hoping that people who are listening aren't overwhelmed by getting all of the information at once. So for us, it's nicer because then we can talk about the things that we want to talk about and pick and choose at each individual. But I just wonder if it's like people are like, wow, this is a lot of information to take in 30 seconds from Aaron.
I wish I could say it all in 30 seconds. That would be great.
I really dig the way we've been doing it because it seems to be pushing a more of an idea of a conversation. So it's been a lot of fun doing it that way. The only thing I feel bad about is like the people who, like, there's clearly stories we aren't going to touch, and there'll be that one person who still listens to our show. It'd be like, you didn't talk about the thing I wanted to hear about. And I'm sorry. We try.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's probably Jim. I don't know who it is, but we're going to call him Jim.
Jim's going to write you an email now.
Good. If he's got that kind of time, feedback at thehollywoodoutsider.com. All right, let's get into it. Here's our news roundup for this week. Ready? One of you need to learn how to do a drum roll. Never mind, I take it back. All right, here's the news roundup. Viola Davis will return for Suicide Squad 2, in which Idris Elba will not be playing Deadshot. It was a big lie. Will Smith still can come back if he wants. Instead, he's going to play a brand new character. Westworld creators Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan inked a 9-figure deal to make TV shows for Amazon Prime. There's a Grease prequel in the works called Summer Lovin'. Who cares? Felicity Huffman pled guilty in the college bribing scandal, complete with an apology that actually accepted responsibility. Hollywood doesn't know what to do. Nobody ever takes responsibility. Hallmark announced that they will release 40 Christmas movies this year. 40. I did not say that wrong. Cowboy Bebop is definitely coming to Netflix as a live action series starring John Cho. Disney announced after they absorbed Fox that they will continue to make new Alien and Planet of the Apes films, as well as you won't get your precious X-Men probably for 5 years. So that's what you get when you don't want my Sophie Turner back. Still sad. Disney, and I already said that, Captain Marvel smashed through $1 billion worldwide. The new Joker trailer was released and the world seemed to be okay with it, except nobody seems to be talking about how the character's name is Arthur Fleck. A. Fleck. Affleck.
Yeah. I was like, why is he reiterating his name?
Thank you. I'm glad someone's paying attention. Bad Moms is getting another sequel, but it centers around the moms. So it's bad grandmas, I guess. The Justice Department warned the Academy to tread lightly over adding rules that would exclude Netflix over antitrust concerns. And speaking of Netflix, they're buying Hollywood's famous Egyptian Theater. And I hope they rename it Suck It Oscars. The Walking Dead announced a third series, which will launch in 2020, centered around two young female antagonists coming of age in the apocalypse. Okay.
So we're combining three different genres into one?
It's a coming-of-age tale. In the apocalypse.
With three female heroes or something. Yep. You said at the beginning, right?
He did. Two young...
I'm sorry, two.
Yeah, two young female antagonists.
Okay.
It's true. They're going to be talking about menstruation and virginity and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, that's great.
While they're fighting off zombies. Which is going to be a weird thing.
I just
thing.
Feel like we're mixing a lot of... Why are we still in the apocalypse?
Anyway, there's two things left. Preacher will end with its upcoming season four. And finally, Nicole and OJ is a movie coming that surmises that OJ was framed. I just assume that OJ wrote this himself. But he didn't. But someone's actually making this movie.
You know, my favorite part of all of this is this OJ story. Because in my research of all this, what I discovered is at one point, OJ reached out to this production company and said, hey... why don't you hire me on to be a consultant because I can walk you through how to recreate the crime scene.
Is that true?
That's true.
Hey, man's got to pay for his golf.
Right. To my answer, I'm like, Juice, you're not supposed to know how to do that. You're innocent, right?
Juice.
You know, it doesn't matter now. He could actually come out. Well, he did write a book. Said, I didn't do it, but if I did, here's how I would have done it or whatever. He could actually say he did it and you couldn't prosecute him.
Well, he actually said a year or two ago that he had an imaginary friend that did it.
Happens.
Can't they, if they have new evidence, though, physical evidence?
Double Jeopardy can never retry him again.
But I thought when there's a change in the case.
Nope. He could literally film himself saying, I did that. And they would just, man.
Is it just another, maybe there's another charge. There's something where you can get somebody a loophole.
No.
He can't be tried for murder again because he was found not guilty of murder.
Maybe littering for throwing his gloves on the ground.
Right. There's ways that you can get people imprisoned.
Anyway, any of the other stuff that really speaks to anybody? Anybody excited about any of that?
Cowboy Bebop, which is actually an anime that I didn't care about, but seeing that cast, I'm super stoked about it. John Cho being the lead of that is really interesting, and then Mustafa Shakir, who was easily the best part of Luke Cage season 2. I mean, even better than Luke Cage himself. Mustafa Shakir was just awesome on screen. I'm really excited to see these two working together on something.
Can we talk about the Joker trailer? Because
we can.
Well, we're going to, because that's my choice.
Okay.
So that's my pick, is the Joker trailer, because I think the movie looks good, but I don't really feel like it's very Joker-y. And the clown thing, like very clown-esque, that part was like,
A little too on the clown nose?
Yeah. Beep, beep. Is that what their noses do? I don't know.
Some of them.
I pushed one and I got arrested, so I don't know.
Anyway, there are a lot of people who are in favor of this movie already, though, who are like, Joaquin.
You're having just as many that hate it. It really just depends on what side of the fandom you fall on. I think it looked fine. It doesn't really look like a Joker movie, I guess. It looks more like a Taxi Driver with makeup.
I'm finding it hard to have reasons to care about this movie.
Oh.
Why, John?
I don't know. Maybe it's the part of me that just didn't touch me in a way to make me go, ooh, this is a Joker movie. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to trigger my love of comics enough to make me want to watch it.
I'll tell you what I got. When I watched it, all I kept thinking was, good. I'm glad we're doing different things. I'm glad they're pissing off fandom because they're getting away from what we know in the comics because... Haven't we got to that point where we've had so much in the comic world that we've seen over and over, done over and over, done over and over the same way? Why not try something different? And for all the people saying Joker never had a backstory, yes, he did. Go look at the comics. In the early comics, he actually had a backstory. But besides that, this isn't really connected, so who cares? Let him try something different. If it doesn't work, all you got to do is pretend you didn't see it.
Well, right. What I feel with this particular movie... is that why make it a Joker story if it's not really much of a Joker story.
Well, we don't know. We haven't seen it.
We haven't, but based off the trailer.
Based on the laughing, based on the makeup, I would say it's a Joker movie.
I feel like they're just taking a little bit of it. And I'm pretty sure the makeup was not that.
There's been many different iterations of the makeup over the years.
Well, I understand that, but it just doesn't feel like a Joker movie. I have no problem with them doing something different. The point is, if you want to do something that's this drastically different, why don't you just make an original idea that's different instead of trying to do something that is with an original character, not just taking a tiny piece of it.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so DC does something that Marvel doesn't necessarily do, which is they run these little one-off stories based off of different ideas to expand just to play with the different characters they have. One of the writers, one time in his life, was actually mugged, and from there he actually wrote a sequence of little Batman novelettes that became its own very thing, but it had very little to do with the actual Batman we all know, and was more about like a man who is dealing with the fact that he was mugged. So it's not anything far from DC to actually run these little stories and to run with these ideas and for them to actually do it on the big screen and not stick to the canon or some sort of like canon that we all know and love. To do some sort of idea like that is very much a DC Comics thing to do. And I applaud them for that.
Which is funny because you just said you weren't that excited about this one, but you applaud them for at least taking a chance. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, because I'm not an asshole.
Wait, are you saying that I am?
I think so.
I feel like that was the implication.
I felt like that's what I heard.
All right, so moving right along. So Idris Elba isn't Deadshot now. Any thoughts or feelings about why this is the case?
Yeah, because they realized that it was mean to Will Smith. They said they didn't want to slight Will Smith. So apparently they changed it. To me, well, because Will Smith is only not in the movie because of a scheduling conflict. It's not like they didn't want him. People keep acting like he was replaced, and that's not what happened. And apparently, whether the internet got to him, whether Will Smith called, whether Jada Pinkett called, I don't know. Somebody called, made a call, and said, let's keep Will in the back burner so he can come back. This way, he can still come back to the franchise if he wants later on.
Right, which is the logical decision to make, and why didn't they make that in the first place?
That's an excellent question. I don't know.
Well,
I could hear your eye roll, by the way.
What we don't haven't mentioned, though, is not only is it Viola Davis coming back, but we've mentioned a while back Harley Quinn's coming back, but also Captain Boomerang is coming back.
Right. And they keep saying it's a reboot. That's a sequel, man.
Yeah.
You're officially a
sequel.
You
got all these people coming back. It is a sequel. It's interesting that they're doing this, and especially seeing how we've got what might be an upswing in the connected universe of the DC Comics.
Can I ask you, do you care if it's all connected anymore?
I just want them to start doing like a cohesive, like not a connected universe, but a cohesive thought. I want it to have at least some sort of grounding in the same world. Like something where the possibility of them becoming this like a connected universe, I want that to still be there.
All right.
But I don't want them to focus on it like they have been. Like they were like, no, we have to like focus on the fact of this being all connected. Marvel didn't focus on all being connected. The way they did it was, oh, let me throw this character in there for like 2 seconds. Yep. Oh, boom, connected.
Yep, that's what they should do. They should start from the ground up. And it looks like they're trying to do that. They had little mentions in Shazam, and they have mentions and probably will be in Joker, although it would be different, you know. They'll have some connections. They're going to do it their own. I want them to do it their own way. Marvel is not the only way to do it. There's plenty of other ways we can do this. So
I just wish they'd have some stability. It doesn't seem like they have a clear focus and a clear mindset of what they want to accomplish. There's no real plan or even thinking about one movie. I feel like there's not a really good plan in motion. They just wing everything. And so that's why you have these messes where, oh, we're going to get rid of this person and have this person play that character. And, oh, never mind, we're not going to do that. Like, that is just really bad execution and also really bad marketing for your product. And it makes you feel...
That's not necessarily marketing. Like, the idea...
They're marketing the movie, though. And now they're marketing it poorly because now they're getting bad PR about their product.
I don't... I think the problem isn't like a marketing problem. The problem is more like they don't know when to shut up is the issue.
Well, they're not making any logical, they're not making logical decisions. They're not sitting down and saying, hey, what are the pros and cons of this decision? They're just making impulsive. It does seem like impulsive. They kind of like
shotgun it a little bit.
And
that's possible. I mean, the whole upper tiers of Warner Brothers has been kind of disheveled for a little bit, and they've had a couple of head changes for so it's possible that now we have a series of heads that will focus on something more moving forward, but we'll see. I think we had Wonder Woman, we had Justice League, then we had Aquaman, and then we had Shazam. That's 3 out of 4, and actually Justice League was still fun, but that's still 3 out of 4 that were pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I'm fine with where they've been. I do agree that how they're doing casting announcements or how they're doing the media releases isn't really working to their advantage. It does feel like it's all over the place. We're announcing this, it's going to be a reboot, but we're bringing all these people back. You know, just announce it all at once or get closer and then announce it.
Make final decisions. Take a poll of what you think people want to know. If you're going to make your decisions based off of the audience.
This is like, Idris, did he get a call? Hey, guess what? You're not going to be Deadshot anymore. You're going
to
be Bronze
He's
Tiger.
Probably like, oh, thank God. I didn't want to be Will Smith.
What was that?
That was like me trying to do that.
We're going
to
get sued.
Idris Elba English voice.
That
was bad.
That was offensive to the UK as a whole. Even over Brexit, I think.
We're canceling the apocalypse.
Wouldn't it be super cool if it was actually Idris who was like, you know what? I don't want to take the place of.
And now what is that?
all have our impressions.
The loafers now?
Now you sound like the Crown. That doesn't sound like Idris Elba. Put a little bass in your voice.
I'm a lady.
We're canceling the apocalypse.
That's Jason Statham,
no,
sir.
No, that sounds just like Idris Elba. And I just want to point out, the only thing I cared about on all this was 40 Christmas movies on the Hallmark channel.
It's crazy.
All that comic shit you guys talked about for 45 minutes, I didn't care about any of it. All I cared about was like, we're getting 40 Christmas movies, because that's either going to be fantastic or insane, and I want to watch every one of them.
Every one of them?
No, I don't want to watch any of them.
I was going to say, there's too much romance in there for you.
Think of all the money they're dumping into Christmas. They could just replay the ones from last year, and I don't think most people would even notice.
I bet you they probably do, though, because wasn't it Netflix that just released a ton of Christmas movies last year, and then I think Lifetime did the same thing?
People love them.
Exactly. People go crazy for this kind of stuff. I mean, that's kind of a smart move.
We need to put our money in a Christmas movie right now, a whole Christmas movie. It'll be, well, it's hosts, left strippers.
And it'll not kid approved.
And we'll play it in Amsterdam, which is a great segue, because Amsterdam has announced a 5D porn cinema. That's right. It's complete with bouncy chairs and water cannons. I want to know. This is all I want to know. Would you go just to see what it's like?
I'm wearing a white t-shirt to this.
Okay. That went a different way than I thought it would.
You said water cannons. I'm in.
Seriously, would you go into this place?
Heck yeah.
All right. John, I already know the answer, but would you go?
This might surprise you. No.
I would give it one shot.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know, man. Porn is not the kind of thing you go into a theater and watch with a bunch of people. I mean, it's a very private thing.
Guys, we're going to the porn house tonight.
Yeah, no, I'm not that kind. I don't need to make eye contact with my buddy being like, yeah, no, it's not happening.
There would be so many.
That's so sticky already.
Ew. That was my fear.
I need to be able to walk into that place and it smells like Pine Sol and alcohol. Like not like tequila alcohol, but like rubbing alcohol. Pine Sol and rubbing alcohol that kill everything. Maybe some Lysol on top of that.
Well, they have water cannons, so maybe they just everybody
gets plastic seat covers. Just to be safe.
Ew, that would be my biggest
fear, though.
You
walk in and get one of those Gallagher's raincoats?
Probably. Like with the watermelon.
Ew.
All right, sorry.
Do you think that they would
have,
like,
there are people that are probably getting grossed out, but sorry, that's funny.
Wars?
What?
In the front of it? Like, do you think they would have, like, as, like, a...
Jello Wars?
Yes.
What kind of porn are you watching?
No, I don't know what movie it was, but there was, like, two ladies who were, like, it was, like, a wrestling and Jello or something. Do you think their grand opening of the theater is going to feature weird stuff like that? Was it old school?
Old school.
Okay, thank you. See, I'm not crazy. John watches the same porn as me.
No, it wasn't porn. I swear to God, and I was by myself the entire time.
I don't know why people would pay for porn to begin with. Seriously, it's the internet.
I would pay for the bouncy chairs and the water cannons.
I kind of would, too.
That's what I want to
know.
For.
What do you do with water cannons? Like, what is going on? That's fascinating to me.
Oh, maybe when...
I wanted to go to Amsterdam just for this. I swear to God, I do.
When the climax happens, maybe that's when the water...
And see, this is where we go. One step too far. All right, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Okay, now it's time for our game of the week. Speaking of dirty, movie innuendo is a game we like to play every now and again. I don't know why my voice cracked, but that's pretty fantastic. We're going to play every now and again where we take innocent lines from specific movies. This week, it is any Stephen King adaptation and then read them or deliver them in a much naughtier manner. This is movie innuendo. We each have two chances to, quote unquote, win. So let's get dirty. John, you get to go first.
All right.
You got to say the movie. Mm-hmm. You got to say the movie and then the line.
Oh, all right. So Shawshank Redemption.
Okay.
Andy Dufresne, who crawled through a river of shit and came out clean on the other side.
That's real gross.
If that's your version of dirty, I don't want to get freaky with you.
This is why I don't go to porn with anyone.
I think he doesn't want to give you that ride anymore.
All right. Is it my turn? Yeah, it's me and then Amanda, right?
Sure.
Sweet.
Right.
This is from The Green Mile. Please, boss. Don't put that thing over my face. Don't put me in the dark. I was afraid of the dark.
You didn't even need to finish the rest of it. Once you said the beginning, that was funny.
The other one was naughtier, but I'll get there. Hopefully it'll still be there when I'm done. Amanda?
My first one is from It 2017. I'll take him. I'll take all of you.
Whoa. You know, that works.
Wow.
All right, John, round two. Final round. Go.
All right, so from It, this isn't real enough for you, Billy. I'm not real enough for you. It was real enough for Georgie.
That last line really sold it, and I almost picked that, too.
And also got me really uncomfortable.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something very different. I was like,
very uncomfortable. Nice job. My last one's from Misery. Everybody,
oh, boy.
Misery.
Oh, crap. I hope you didn't take my good one.
Well, I don't know, but get ready. You want it? You want it. Eat it! Eat it till you choke, you sick, twisted fuck! It's dirty.
You bastard. That was my line.
That's not part of the thing. There's no bastard.
I could have done it better.
Okay, well then take it and do it better. See if you can win.
I'm going to use a different one. I can't cheat.
Okay.
I'm still mad you took it, though.
You know, you could just deliver that one better.
All right, I'm ready.
Go.
You want it? You want it? Eat it. Eat it till you choke.
Nah.
No. You're the man. You're like made for this. Maybe I couldn't deliver
it. Mine was angry.
No,
yours was angry.
Yeah. I mean, there's a better way to deliver that.
There is. Oh, do you want to deliver
John,
it?
John, you want to help us out?
No.
Yes, you do.
Do you want
no,
it?
No, I don't.
You want it. Come on, eat it. Eat it. Eat it till you choke.
See, that's a better way to deliver it right there.
You're welcome.
I had a child one and I was like worried about going to that one. That's my backup.
Why?
Because it's a child one.
He just did Georgie.
That's
I mean,
true.
Not literally. He just did
He didn't actually.
Like, okay, well, you guys decide who won because I don't even know if that went well. All right, so let's go to our... let's move on to our Patreon supporters before we get to our reviews. Our show is independently funded, therefore all of the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. On the same token, we don't believe in just asking for handouts. So we do offer bonus content exclusively through Patreon, depending on what tier you select. If you pick $3, we have a monthly bad movie night where we discuss a film that critics or others deem a bad movie, but we like it. Then at $5, you get a bonus monthly episode plus bad movie night, and you get all of that immediately, all past episodes and everything as soon as you sign up for whatever tier you select. There's a lot of tiers, so please check it out, and I hope you guys join and support us. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We're going to have a little bit of a Game of Thrones battle royale.
What?
On the bonus episode this month.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're not going to do the same as we do it on the show. We're just going to fight.
Like physically?
Yes.
With swords?
Joust. Spoiler free reviews. We've got two for you this week. We've got Shazam and Pet Sematary. The first up is Shazam, which I'm very disappointed was not a Jim Neighbors biography, and maybe three people understand that reference. In Philadelphia, Asher Angel stars as Billy Batson, a troubled teen orphan desperately searching for the mother that abandoned him. In his latest home, Billy makes a new friend in Freddy and finds himself selected by the wizard Shazam to be his new champion. Now endowed with the ability to instantly become an adult superhero who looks just like Zachary Levi by speaking the wizard's name, coincidentally, that's Shazam. However, every superhero needs a supervillain, and Shazam's is Mark Strong's Dr. Thaddeus Savanna, who was previously rejected by the wizard and has accepted the power of the seven deadly sins instead, but needs Shazam's power to be complete. With the fate of his newly christened family on the line, Billy must quickly learn to be a hero before Savannah destroys everything he loves. Actually, all three of us saw this, but we're going to go to John here first. This is DC After Dark, essentially. The tone is a lot lighter than other DCEU fans, which we kind of talked about. Does it fit Shazam? Does the tone work for you throughout this movie? Or is it one of those things where people were conflicted in previous DC movies?
No, this absolutely fits the tone of Shazam. Shazam should be something that's a little lighter, a little bit more fun, and plays with the idea that you have a hero who's actually a 12 or sometimes 13, or this time he's 15-year-old boy who suddenly turns into an adult. Like, this totally fits with it. And whether it was light or dark, I don't think it matters anymore. It was just fun.
I seriously loved this movie, and I think the way they did the tone, the theme, how everything worked together, the balance of comedy and action and a little bit of darkness was exactly what I wanted it to be. Now, Johnny obviously knows the comics a whole lot more than I do. I don't know anything about these comics.
I don't need to,
but now I kind of want to, because this made me love the property. Like, genuinely loved this movie.
Originally, he was called Captain Marvel. That helps you.
Yep.
Are you for real?
He was the first Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was a joke on the internet.
No. Internet, no. Internet doesn't make jokes.
He was actually the first Captain Marvel, and for a while, his comics outsold Superman, and so because of that, DC sued Fawcett Comics, who were the ones who held the rights to Captain Marvel, and in the span of time in between the whole suing happened and they stopped producing the comics, that's when Marvel swooped in and took the name Captain Marvel. And there's always been a battle back and forth between DC and Marvel for that, because DC then bought Captain Marvel.
Oh my gosh, you're like a great little comic thesaurus. That was so enlightening. No, seriously, that was real. I had no idea about any of that. There's like a war behind this,
apparently. Great. Yeah. Good tip. Thanks. The thing that I was surprised with was how actually dark it was in parts. Because, I mean, there are things biting people's heads off. And Venom couldn't even get away with that. And really, I guess Venom had it. But I feel like they showed more here than they did in Venom in a way. But
I think it was probably the idea that was more shocking. You weren't really prepared for the biting of heads off. You weren't prepared for a room of people being torn to shreds by monsters. It's just something you didn't think of that, because you're thinking, hey, I'm watching big, only superheroes, and it's fun and light, and oh my god, someone's dying. Like, but Captain Marvel and Black Adam, they're two sides of the same coin, which they alluded to Black Adam in this movie a little bit. Like, they get really dark as far as Black Adam's concerned, and he is another character. He's kind of like another Venom, only not nearly as goofy.
Yeah, and that's The Rock. The Rock has already been cast as Black Adam.
Oh, really?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And he's actually an executive producer on this one, because he kind of pulled back and made this happen. So it's interesting.
Oh.
I was pleasantly surprised. I've never been down on Shazam, and I liked the trailer, but I kind of thought it was going to be a little too cheesy. And it does ride that line. And like, there's moments in the movie where it's like right down the line of it's going to fall over into this should have been made in the 80s for $40 with Dolph Lundgren. But it stays, it stays the line. It really totes the line. It does a great job of maintaining a strong tone, of a nice balance, like Amanda said, a nice balance of tone with dark and light, and seeing big in the cut. That's what I love about this movie, is that it makes me remember that it's fun to be a superhero.
Yeah.
Right.
Need more of that.
And Zachary Levi was the best casting for that role. Like, I was hoping for somebody else. I know The Rock was pushing for Armie Hammer to be casted in that role.
No,
but
no.
Zachary Levi, he can actually... And I haven't seen him in a lot of things. I wasn't a big Chuck fan. I didn't watch any of it. But in the things that I have seen him in, when I knew he was being cast in this role, I thought it perfect. Because he sells it. He sells it with his face. He sells it with his sense of humor. He can sell this idea thoroughly. And good on them for choosing him for this line.
I was pleasantly surprised because I like Zachary Levi. I like Chuck. He was in Psych the Movie 2.
Yeah.
Psych the Movie. Sorry, the first, there is 2's not out yet.
I was going to say, did you get a screener I didn't know about? I
already watched it. Already gave it 10 stars. So he was a guy I was really looking forward to seeing in the role, but I was still surprised at how good he did. Speaking of him, you already talked about him. What about Mark Strong as the villain? John, were you okay with him as Sylvana? Because he was a little less deep.
He was a little less deep, but at least I understood his motivations, and he's an evil bastard. Mark Strong even says his character's an evil bastard, and I agree with it. But I see where they were doing and trying to at least give him some sort of backing and explain why he's the way he is, because he has a tough family. He was almost so close to being given ultimate power, but because he's kind of a sniveling crap, he didn't get it. And yeah, I enjoyed him thoroughly as the villain.
This is one of the few times where I've actually enjoyed the villain in a superhero movie. Usually it's either... like I can tolerate them and they're not a distraction, or they're way too cheesy, or there's something that's just really bad about it that takes me a little bit away from the movie. And I seriously loved Mark Strong. I like him anyway, but I thought he was perfect for this.
Yeah,
and
he was
sold
for this,
the
yeah.
villain
yeah.
and the way that they made it. I assume that it's close to what the comic was like, that villain yeah. character. But if it wasn't, then they did a great job creating it, because it was still very villainesque, but it was also very grounded and realistic, where people can understand where this person was coming from. Like, you felt for this kid now grown up. And he was also the same way as Billy Batson.
The way that they open it and kind of explain his origin story, I guess, that was an interesting way to do it, because I did for a while feel bad for him. And then I realized, no, he just turned into an older dick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was kind of cool, though, like when he went into that office.
Well, let's not spoil anything.
Well, I'm not going to, but when he goes in the office.
When he sends a letter in her office. It's crazy. Things get wild. Can we talk about the padded suit? Anybody else bothered by the padded suit? Because that was padded.
Oh.
No, not bothered.
I didn't realize it was, so yeah. No.
You thought it was all Levi?
Yeah. I mean, have you seen him in interviews? He is a bulky dude.
Yes. But
no, he's big now, but there is still some padding.
There's still some padding.
Well, that's fine.
Typically, when you flex, muscles move. But it was kind of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jen, like he's supposed to be bigger than Superman in a way, right?
Whenever they depict him in the comics, he is like Superman's usually this graceful, statuesque character. And whereas like Shazam is just a like a fire plug. He is just bulky. He's supposed to be considered as like the ideal man, and they push the limits of his muscle like density to extremes. It's ridiculous how big they make him.
Okay, so one more question, then I'll get your score. The whole DCEU. So we've had Aquaman, which was kind of lighter in tone. You've got this one. You've got Wonder Woman. Do you believe that there should be a consistent tone, or do you, because Marvel, a lot of their movies are very similar in tone. I mean, they're very, very much a similar feel. Do you want that to be what happens here now, this similar tone, or do you like going darker and then lighter and then darker and then lighter? I know we kind of talked about it earlier, but it's more specific.
I just want them to tell these stories at this point. I don't care if it's lighter or darker or whatever. I want them to tell these stories for these characters with a sort of reverence and love like Marvel has. I want them to pull a Marvel on this, but I just want them to be able to tell these stories, because there's a lot of characters in the DC universe who need just about as much, if not more, love than all these characters combined that we've had before. And there's just so many rich ideas, because they've been around around, frankly, a lot longer than a lot of these Marvel characters have. So there's so much to build off of. There's so much to do. And there's so many great stories they can tell. And this idea of Marvel versus DC, I don't ever buy into that. More comic book movies makes it better for all of us.
Yeah, John has a great point with that. And we did talk about it earlier. And so I think it really comes down to how people who are listeners feel about the being very divisive between the worlds. Because if you're like, Marvel has this tone and I don't ever want them to go super dark, and DC is supposed to be dark, so I never want them to go super light, then you want all of the movies to essentially be the same and probably be connected in uniform and like some sort of unison. And I don't think Shazam would have worked great if it was a dark movie. This is about trying to spark that inner child in us that believes in superheroes, and it's still dark enough where you're like, wow, this is really powerful.
People are dying.
Right. So there's still gravity to the situation, but there should be no specific chart that says, okay, your movie is from this world, so it's going to have to be this tone. It should be, we have the best vision for this movie by doing it this way. We have the passion for it. We have the right casting. We have the right storytellers. This is the best way to make the movie. Not, well, let's fit it within the chart.
Well, there's a lot to be said for that.
There's other ways to find the connective tissue, whether it's characters, whether it's references. There's other ways to find connective tissues, but each story deserves its own light or dark tone, depending on how they tell the story. When they do Black Adam, Black Adam is going to be, it should be scary. It should be like almost terrifying when we see it.
Well,
I'm really interested in, this is my idea. Okay. Everybody listen. When they eventually do Justice League 2, I want to see a morbid, dark, son of a bitch Batman, and I want to see Shazam just pop in and chew bubble gum. That's my dream. And Aquaman's on the side going, my man! That's all I want.
And, you know, I know you don't watch animations, but the Warner Brothers Animation House for the DC Universe has been doing these stories, and seeing Shazam do exactly that is a lot of fun, because it happens just the way you describe it. Batman's sitting there being, I'm Batman. And Shazam's just like, just trying to hold it together. He's like, you can tell he's a kid being like, I'm surrounded by Batman, Superman, and all these other guys. What am I going to do? I'm going to show off. That's what I'm going to do. I'm totally going to show off.
I love that. I love this whole character. All right, so $10 is the full price for Mission. What do you give? I'm sorry, Manny, you have one more point?
I was just going to ask you guys if you agree with me that there is a unison between these movies and DC, and that it's a lot of the superheroes, if not all of them, are rooted in some sort of youthful trauma. And so
that's every superhero, I would say.
Well, some, but some of it's like, we need to do this because we need to save the whole universe. Whereas I feel like a lot of the DC movies are, I've had something really bad happen to me in my life. Like, this kid has been going through the adoption system for his forever. Mm-hmm. And then you have Batman, whose parents were killed. And it's all very, very dark in the basic
nature. How do you know
that
his parents were killed? Was it the four origin stories?
It was a good guess. Yeah. I'm a good guesser.
The fever dreams?
Yeah, right. So it seems like that is where their darkness is rooted in. And that's how they are managed to tie in their heart of the story, is these characters are built from the trauma that they've experienced. And yes, you see that in other superhero movies, but they're not necessarily rooted and based within that. So
that, and there's a lot more gods.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gods in the DC universe where they're mostly people who come upon technology and whatnot. In
like very
Marvel.
Mythology
based. Yeah. I mean, Marvel has Thor, but it feels like almost half of DC's characters are like Thor. You know, they're just gods. So, all right, $10 is the full price of Mission. What do you give Shazam, John?
$7.50.
Amanda?
I feel uncomfortable with how high my score is.
No, what?
$9.
Hey, if you loved it that much.
Go for it. I'll allow it.
I'll split the difference and go $8. So there you go.
All right.
Boom. We're all saying it's damn good. That's all I'm saying. Now we go to Pet Sematary. Hey, oh, I'm sorry. You have more on Shazam?
We can go back to just like, if you listen to my tone and timbre of my voice this entire time, you can tell how excited I am about the movie.
Right. Few things make John happy. Shazam is one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Now we move to Pet Sematary, where feelings are different.
Oh, boy. Well, Pet Sematary is based on the horror novel by Stephen King, and it follows Dr. Lewis Creed, who, after relocating with his wife Rachel and their two young children from Boston to rural Maine, discovers a mysterious burial ground hidden deep in the woods near the family's new home. When tragedy strikes, Lewis turns to his unusual neighbor, Judd Crandall, who is John Lithgow in Amazing, setting off a perilous chain reaction that unleashes an unfathomable evil with horrific consequences. Now, Johnny, you didn't see this one, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I did not.
Bye. Aaron, you did. I'm just kidding. Aaron, you and I both
get
saw
out of here,
this.
Bitch!
What did you think of this in terms of, and I don't want to start off with a comparison, but I'm going to, between the original and also the novel that you've read, the book. So how do you feel it compares in terms of both of those properties?
Well, I mean, they changed the entire ending. So that's, I'm fine with that. I mean, as you'll find out when we get to our Stephen King thing, I'm okay with changing an ending as long as it's for the better. I just, how they did it, I felt was very lazy and kind of cheesy. Mm. So first, I called all of the Pet Semataries What Cats Are Really Like, the movie. It's true, because all cats are this evil to me. When it comes to the remake, it really felt to me that every major event that happens is either lifted from the script of the first film, but with their own kind of twist on how it happened in the first film. And then every surprise or scare that occurs is kind of a play on audience expectations from that first movie. So if, and I mean it, like every single, like every one of them, if you're expecting Church to drop a certain dead animal here, it's going to be over there and it's still going to be flapping. Judd's ankle, you think it might get sliced in one scene? Nope. Different scene, but they're going to set it up like it's going to be sliced in that one scene.
Is that spoilery?
No, because I mean, it might be. I don't care. if you're expecting Gage to be hit by a semi, maybe it happens a different way. You don't know. Like, things are different than you remember them in the original. Now, if you've never seen it, well, then I probably just ruined some stuff for you. But I feel the majority of the people I know that are going to see this have already seen the original, because it is kind of a classic and many people have seen this growing up. But I haven't really spoiled exactly what happens. You know, I mean, you kind of get the gist of it. But it really felt like it was everything that was scripted was based around that first movie. It was really based around the fact of what you expect is going to happen, and especially how it ends. It's basing on what you remember the ending from the first one, because it does everything kind of opposite, except at one point there is a child. I won't say who, I won't say when in the movie, but there's a child left in a car for what seems like days. And that just feels uncomfortable to me. That's the only part of the movie where I'm like, what? That just doesn't happen. But there's a lot of moments in the movie where I'm just like, this is just you trying to be different as opposed to telling a good story.
Do you think it relied too much on the original movie from relying on the novel?
Yep.
Because you read it. So did you see a lot of similarities from the novel, or did it really feel like somebody was like, oh, I haven't read the book, but I've watched the movie?
I feel like the screenplay is based more on what people know about the movie. The movie's very, I mean, Stephen King wrote the first movie.
Right.
So it's very close to his book. It's very, very close to his book.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. But I really felt this script was based more, it was more taking off from what audiences already know about the original movie. It felt like they were more invested in playing off expectations of that first film than making their own film, which is my problem with it. And also the pacing wasn't great.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
let's be honest. The first half of the movie, and if the first half of your movie is poorly paced, that's not a good setup for your entire movie.
Well, and you gotta. Jason Clarke is a fine actor. I don't think he's a great actor, but he's a fine actor. But you gotta believe in why this guy would do these things. Why would he want certain things to happen in the movie?
Right.
And you have to believe he's that traumatized that he would go to those lengths knowing what he already knows. And I don't buy any of it. When it gets to that point, it just feels like I'm only doing these things because the script told me I had to do these things. So I better hurry up and do these things.
I can agree with that. And one of the things that bothered me the most, I went to the bathroom and missed a very pivotal scene.
You're really mad about this.
I'm so mad about this. I missed probably what could be considered the biggest scene of the entire movie.
It absolutely was the biggest scene in the movie.
Because I chose a poor time to go to the bathroom.
I saw it with her, so yeah.
Yeah, so I was gone. I come back. Aaron recaps me real quick on what happened. And I was like, oh, wow, I missed a lot in that short amount of time. And then 10 minutes later, they literally, through the dialogue, recap everything that I missed. Like, word for word, played out exactly what happened 5-10 minutes ago. Okay.
Well, you know why? Because the pacing was so bad, they assumed people left to go pee because they were bored out of their minds. And then, yeah.
It was the most unnecessary exposition that was already expositioned. Anyway, my last question for you, because we've kind of dug on this movie quite a bit. Did you see that? Did you get that?
Yeah, I dug on that. I got it. I was preferring to go past it.
What did you like about this movie?
Oh, well,
take all the time you need.
The kids were okay. Well, John Lithgow was really good. So there you go. And to me, because I do have fond memories of the original movie, people can feel what they want about it. I like the original movie quite a bit. And Fred Gwynne is very hard to compete with in that role. And I really believe John Lithgow brought it. Man, I like that they took a chance. I really do like that they took a chance with the ending and doing something different. I just think what they did was not a good turn of events. It just didn't work for me. But John Lithgow was great. I really feel like there was a lot of potential in the movie. So it's the story's great. Like the adding the kids and showing, this is the very beginning. You've seen this in the trailer where the kids have their funeral procession and kind of giving that vibe for understanding why the pet cemetery is being used by local kids and stuff. I mean, that was a nice nod or twist to what the pet cemetery is. I like that. So it was more, not much.
That was a really cool scene.
Yeah. There's, I really liked that. Not much else, really.
Okay. So the full price of admission were $10. What would you pay for Pet Cemetery?
$4.
$4?
$4, yeah. The story, the idea of the story is already great in its own right. Like, seriously, the book is great. And that ending is better. I'm fine with changing the ending as long as it is a solid ending. And this is, seriously, I laughed out loud at the ending. So,
you know, I have heard that there was a podcast that actually remade that movie, right?
That's what I heard.
Yeah. And the ending on that one was pretty solid.
I think it's a much better movie. Yeah. You can probably find that if you can find that podcast, Remake This Movie Right, yeah. Pet Cemetery.
Yeah, I think that would be much better. And don't go see the movie, just
thanks
listen to that.
For the cheap plug. All right, now that's going to do it for that one. What was your score? I'm sorry, $10.
Oh, honestly, I'm leaning towards $350. I'm so mad about that exposition. I'm so angry
so
about it.
So weird about these little hang-up things.
There was some things that were
cool. Weren't you the one that hated Sansa Stark, too? And then you really...
I don't hate her. Like, she's better now, like. But I don't like her now.
Nah, we got to move on, because I'm just going to get angry.
You're going to get angry.
New releases. We got to get to our topic. But first, we've got some new releases. After comes out on April 12th. It's about a young woman who falls for a guy with a dark secret, and the two embark on a rocky relationship. Based on the novel by Anna Todd, it stars Hero Fiennes Tiffin, Selma Blair, Josephine Langford. Alternate title was Nope.
Oh, but Selma Blair, like, I want to support her.
Oh, well, I'm going to pretend that I'm supporting her. I'll go watch Hellboy the original again.
Oh, my gosh.
Speaking of Hellboy, we have Hellboy on April 12th. Based on the graphic novels by Mike Mignola, Hellboy, caught between the worlds of supernatural and human, battles an ancient sorceress bent on revenge. This is starring David Harbour as the aforementioned Hellboy, Mila Jovovich, and Ian McShane.
Hard pass. Little what? Comes out. Yeah, we'll talk about that. April.
What?
What? I think it looks terrible.
Oh.
What?
Wow. And I love Mila Jovovich, and I looked at her and I was like, this is not good.
You're not good.
I heard somebody in the theater watching the trailer who said, I am never going to see this. And they were talking about how they were excited to finally see the trailer. And
I don't care about those people.
Was that person you?
No.
And you just don't want to say it was just you?
No.
All right, what else you got? I can't handle this.
Little comes out on April 12th as well. Jordan is a take-no-prisoners tech mogul who torments her long-suffering assistant, April, and the rest of her employees on a daily basis, aka all of our daily jobs. She soon faces an unexpected threat to her personal life and career when she magically transforms into a 13-year-old version of herself right before a do-or-die presentation. Jordan will now need to rely on April more than ever if April is willing to stop treating Jordan like a 13-year-old child who has an attitude problem. Scott Regina.
Oh, right. This is the reverse big.
Yes.
Yeah, Gib.
But with Regina Hall, Issa Rae. Is it Issa Rae? I think it's Issa Rae.
ISA.
ISA? So is I said it right the first time?
RZA? RZA? What?
No. Oh. ISSA. Yeah. And then Tone Bell.
Okay. What else we got? Because I don't want to see that. Well, no, actually, that,
it looks kind of funny.
That actually kind of looks kind of
funny.
The
description is terrible, but if you actually watch the trailer, it looks kind of funny.
Yeah, it does look funny.
All right, following that, we have Missing Link. Mr. Link recruits explorer Sir Lionel Frost to help find his long-lost relatives in the fabled Valley of Shangri-La. Along with adventurer Adelina Fortnite. Oh, Fortnite. That's why they use that. That's dumb. This trio of explorers travels the world to find a new friend. This stars Hugh Jackman, Zach Galifianakis, and Zoe Saldana.
It's a cartoon.
Oh.
Voice actress.
It's stop motion clay.
Okay. It's a cartoon. Stop motion clay cartoon.
That sounded terrible. And then you said the names and I was like, maybe I missed and we're on a different movie.
Yeah, I would watch it if Hugh Jackman was walking around a loincloth for about 2 hours.
What is your fascination with the man?
He's gorgeous. I didn't say that at all like a straight man, did I? All right, so special. Netflix season 1, April 12th. The series looks to turn the autobiography of Ryan O'Connell, who suffers from cerebral palsy, into a comedy sitcom with Ryan also starring and involved in writing, too. And it's backed by Jim Parsons. That sounds very cool.
That does sound really cool.
And lastly?
Lastly is The Silence, which comes out April 12th as well. When the world is under attack from creatures who hunt their human prey by sound, a teenager who lost her hearing at 13 and her family seeks safety in a remote refuge. However, they discover a cult who are eager to exploit her heightened senses. Stanley Tucci, Miranda Otto, and Kiernan Shipka, and it was directed by John Leonetti, who did Annabelle and was the DP for The Conjuring and Insidious.
This is like A Quiet Place too.
Except for the book was made before A Quiet Place, so it is a real story that existed prior to A Quiet Place. So maybe A Quiet Place stole the content and idea from this.
Right. It's possible.
Right, because What's-His-Face would totally do that.
Yeah.
John Krasinski.
Oh, yeah. John Krasinski. That's the one. He's infallible. He wouldn't do such things.
He is handsome. That beard would never do wrong.
See, she already went ahead and changed the subject.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so pick of the week. Of those, what is the one you're most likely to see, John?
Hellboy.
The Silence.
I'm going with Hellboy as well. The Silence really just sounds like A Quiet Place. I just saw that movie.
It does, but one of our listeners has been like really talking this up and said the book was incredible and is also an author, so I trust him, and I'm hoping that the film lives up to the book.
Okay. Let me know, and then I'll decide if I'm going to watch it.
I also want to see Little, though. That's my theater movie.
I said pick of the week.
Yeah. All right, so if we're going to start doing this again, The Silence, it will be something I watch when I have some downtime this weekend.
Yeah, and I'm going to watch Special, too. You know what? I'll probably watch after, just because.
Oh, I do want to see Special. You're going to watch after?
No, I'm okay. Not. My point is, pick one, woman. All right, that's going to do it. Now we're going to move on to our Stephen King movie battle royale. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider movie battle royale. That is where we take 8 films, 2 favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire Ho universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of a genre. It's time for the movie battle royale. That's right. It's the Stephen King adaptation edition. Before we get to the rules, I guess. Welcome from the Blacklist Exposed and several Stephen King related episodes of Remake This Movie Right, which we just referenced a little bit ago. Troy Heinrichs.
I do have the shine. Thanks for having me here.
A lot of people don't know what that means, man.
That was cheesy.
They will by the time this is over.
All right. Well, this is our Stephen King movie battle royale. As I said, if you've never heard our battles before, we select our top 8 candidates and vote away to decide what is the greatest film of its kind in hostory. That's too cheesy.
That was way too far.
Oh, history. This time we actually tried to do things a little different. So instead of us picking, usually what we do is we each pick 2 and then we kind of battle it out for the top one and then just ask the listeners what they thought. We did it different this time. This time we let listeners and those in our Facebook group vote on the 8 finalists. So while we're deciding the ultimate winner, you guys decided who the final 8 were going to be, mostly so you can't bitch at us that one of them didn't make it to the final 8. Boom.
Way to sound hostile to our fans or our listeners, or I mean, I guess calling them fans is too presumptuous.
I just want to say thank you to the fans for not voting for Dreamcatcher.
Did you really think it was going to be an issue?
John sounded offended.
Jumped on Dreamcatcher.
Did the remake? I'm not talking about it again.
Yeah, it's a bad movie. Awful. Okay. One other stipulation. This is important before you actually vote. The quality of the adaptation can be a factor in your vote, but ultimately we are voting on what are the best movies, not necessarily what is the absolute closest to King's original work, because I'm sure that's exactly the kind of comments we're going to get no matter which way we vote. I don't care what you vote for. Somebody's going to say this other movie was much closer to the book. And honestly, if we did that, we'd have to bounce a few of these out already. The Shining, you know, there's some movies that just aren't that faithful, but are still great movies based on Stephen King's work. So that's what we're basing on. Best movie. Clear?
Crystal.
Clear.
I guess.
Well, at least you're convinced. All right, with that, let's get into this. We do Ho North and Ho South. Each person presents their two movies and why they should be voted for, each one of them. Then they collect the vote, and then we'll move on to the semifinals. Amanda, you go first. Ho North. Go ahead.
My first one is Pet Sematary from 1989.
I'll bite, John. What's the bottom of the truth?
Well, sometimes dead is better. The person you put up there ain't the person that comes back. It may look like that person, but it ain't that person. Because whatever lives in the ground beyond the Pet Sematary ain't human at all.
After tragedy strikes, a grieving father discovers an ancient burial ground behind his home with the power to raise the dead. Creepy cats, creepy children, children who get hit by trains and their shoes go flying. This is a pretty good movie. People come back from the dead, animals come back from the dead. It's awesome. Some of the interesting facts that I found about this is Stephen King required the movie to be filmed in Maine and his screenplay to be followed rigorously. As has been mentioned earlier in the show, he's the one who wrote the script, so it's obviously something that, from the novelist himself, had a lot of deciding factor and power into what went into this movie. But it's still a great movie even without that. The original cut of the film delivered to Paramount's executives was judged to be too long, so excess footage had to be removed. They also decided that the closing scene was too tame, and at their request, it was reshot to be more graphic. I thought this was a great point to bring up, because who doesn't want more graphic content in their Stephen King film, right?
Whatever makes it a better movie.
It made it better.
Okay.
Also, the budget was, not that this really helps it too much, $11.5 million, and it grossed $57 million. And Bruce Campbell was set to be the first choice for the role of Lewis Creed.
I knew that.
Sad tears that he wasn't. But the casting still worked really great.
I think Dale Midkiff is great.
This is a good movie. And obviously, lots of people voted for it. So It's a great pick.
What's your second one?
My second is Stand By Me from 1986.
Could he have gotten all the way from Chamberlain to Harlem? That's really far.
Sure. He must have started walking on the train tracks and just followed them the whole way.
Yeah, right. And then after dark, train must have come along and all smacko.
Yeah. Hey, you guys. I bet you anything that if we find him, we'll get our pictures in the paper.
Yeah, we could even be on TV.
Sure,
we'll be heroes.
After the death of a friend, a writer recounts a boyhood journey to find the body of a missing boy. It has Will Wheaton, River Phoenix, Jerry O'Connell, Corey Feldman, and Kiefer Sutherland, who's amazing. After director Rob Reiner screened the movie for Stephen King.
Are you saying Will Wheaton is not amazing?
No, I am. They're all amazing.
Okay.
They're all amazing.
Because he's Crusher. You know what I'm saying?
They're all amazing.
Just letting you know. Okay.
Continue. Even the ones who have passed, RIP. After director Rob Reiner screened the movie for Stephen King.
Hang on. That actually is RIP because it's River Phoenix. So I'm just having a whole brain thing going on right now.
What is going on right
Sorry,
now?
Sorry, I interrupted you twice. Go ahead.
You have like a severe ADD tonight.
You said RIP and I'm like, wait, does she mean his initials? Holy shit.
Is his middle name an I?
It is now.
Oh my gosh. Well, anyway, when the movie was screened for Stephen King, he noticed that director had noticed that King was visibly shaking and wasn't speaking. He left the room and upon his return told Reiner that the movie was the best adaptation of his work he had ever seen, which is spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
To have he didn't write the script on this one, but he had somebody who, the director, that he really believed in and, I mean, physically made him shake from watching this movie. There's also some really interesting parts that I found out about this. So the movie is amazing and it's also a classic. And I even watched part of this in school. I don't think I should have watched part of this in school.
Really? Like in class?
Like in middle school.
What are they teaching? This is how you find a body, kids.
I think it was just about read. It was like an English class. So it was like, okay. But we didn't read the book. So I don't.
Well, it's a very short story. So.
Yeah, I have it. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it when I first bought it, that that's what it was from. The body was from this. Anyway, in the campfire scene in which Chris breaks down, Rob Reiner was sure River Phoenix could do better. He asked him to think of a time in his own life when an adult had let him down and use it in the scene, which Phoenix did. Upset and crying, he had to be comforted by the director afterwards. The result of Phoenix's exercise is a scene that ended in the final cut, which is pretty spectacular too, and also really traumatic to make a child that frantic. But also, the performances were so captivating because they were real, raw emotions that were brought to life. River Phoenix did lose his virginity thanks to this movie.
With Corey Feldman?
No. Oh. But Corey Feldman did have his first experience drinking alcohol, kissing a girl off screen, and smoking pot for the first time. So this movie really set some set their lives on a new stage. They also got some pot cookies. But
what does any of that have to do with the movie?
It doesn't, but they're fun facts. Okay, so here's the last thing. This is how much people believed in this movie before it even began filming. Coca-Cola bought Embassy Pictures, the film's original production company, and announced it wasn't going to fund the film just 2 days before production was to begin. Norman Lear, who had worked with Rob for years on All in the Family, mm-hmm. was one of the three owners of Embassy prior to its sale. He believed in the project so much that he agreed to personally foot the film's $8 million budget. I'm not throwing anybody $8 million, but if I do, like this man, it's probably for a good reason. This film has spectacular child actors, a great story, and it's one that lives on. So those are my two picks.
Okay.
Troy, our guest, what is your choice between Pet Sematary and Stand By Me?
Well, Pet Sematary itself is creepy as all get out because I hate animals to begin with, and I hate animals that come back to life even more. But just the entire concept of the fact that he moved away from Chicago to come to this place, this creepy ass in the woods where trucks hit everything that come down the highway. I mean, you get property taxes have to be even higher there because of all the accidents, plus the creepy woods in the back. Move back to Chicago, dude. But Stand By Me is by far the better movie. It's the best Stephen King adaptation. It's almost word for word to the body. I have to add in a little bit just for screen presence. Plus, it has an amazing remake that was done. So I will vote for Stand By Me in a heartbeat.
Good pick. Johnny, what's yours?
I'm going to have to go with Stand By Me for all the reasons that Troy just said, with the exception of the adaptation, because I don't know any of that because I don't read. But on the flip side of that, Pet Sematary was a movie that I just never resonated with me. It never really did anything for me. And least of all, it didn't scare me because, like, you know, not scary.
Oh, well then, not good enough for you. Mm-hmm. Aaron, is Pet Sematary good enough for you?
It's very close, actually. Like, legitimately, I've had to debate this all day. Because I love both movies. I don't care what anybody says. That Pet Sematary won. Dale Midkiff is great in that movie. He gets zero appreciation, and I make fun of him for the no scene.
It's so great.
But it's really... He does everything Jason Clarke doesn't do. He convinces me why a guy would want to do the things he does in that movie and dig up and bury his wife and hope she comes back and, you know, his kid and everything. All that stuff he does, I get why he does it in that movie. So, but Stand By Me is really, it's not perfection to me. It's not a perfect movie, but it's a great film. It is a great film. And I have to pick that one. It doesn't matter what I'm at because it's already... Stand By Me.
Well, anyway, yeah, but we still like to know.
It would still be Stand By Me.
Wow.
It's not my favorite Stephen King adaptation, as you're about to find out, but it's definitely, it's up there.
Okay. Well, Stand By Me moves on.
All right. That's my turn. My first movie is The Mist.
Going out now, Mrs. Carmody. Please stand aside.
You can't go out. I won't allow it.
Won't allow it?
It's against God's will. Don't you know that by now? Haven't I proven myself again and again and again? Haven't I shown that I am his vessel? What's the matter with you? Don't you believe in God?
No one's interfered with you.
All we're asking for is the same privilege.
The plot revolves around members of the small town of Bridgeton, Maine, who, after a severe thunderstorm, causes the power to go out the night before, they meet in the supermarket to pick up supplies. While they struggle to survive, an unnatural mist envelops the town and conceals vicious Lovecraftian monsters as extreme tensions rise among the survivors, all probably because of those damn scientists on Arrowhead Mountain. And be wary of Mrs. Carmody, because she's nuts. The Mist is my all-time favorite Stephen King story, by a mile. I mean, it's a short novella, but it's my favorite one, by a mile. Favorite book is Desperation. That's a whole other story. So it's no surprise that I took this one, but let me tell you what's so great about the movie. Written and directed by Frank Darabont, who helmed three films in our top eight. Three in this top eight are directed by Frank Darabont. So I really feel it's going to be a Darabont battle royale at some point. The Mist stars Thomas Jane as a father determined to protect his son, Andre Brower as his lawyer neighbor Brent, Lori Holden as Amanda Dumfries, and Marcia Gay Harden as a religious nut, Mrs. Carmody. The novella doesn't have an ending, okay? It actually concludes with several of them continuing into the mist. But Darabont wanted to try something different, so he gave this film one of the most controversial endings in film history, I would argue. I won't spoil what it is, but it's bold, it's grim, and it's horrific. And of course, Stephen King approved, which I think is saying a lot. Now, there are some fun facts as well. The monsters are terrifying more so in the black and white version that Darabont preferred. You can find it on a home video. But the movie was scarier because it showed how quickly people will turn on each other when terrified, how they'll come to believe in things they previously didn't, like God, and how quickly humanity can spiral out of control. But Frank Darabont agreed to make the film with Dimension only under the condition that no matter what, they would not change the scripted ending. They agreed, but Darabont had to forfeit his director's salary.
What?
That's how committed he was to getting this done. Because they had to cut the budget in half because the ending is very dire. It's not a Hollywood ending in any way, shape, or form. During an action scene in the film, a man runs into a wire rotating bookshelf in the grocery store. And if you look carefully, you can clearly see that all of the books on the shelf are written by Stephen King. Aha. Mm. Uh-huh. And also, this is kind of an interesting fact. Jeffrey DeMunn, Melissa McBride, Lori Holden, Juan Gabriel Pereira, Sherry Dvorak, Sam Witwer, and Tiffany Morgan are all in The Walking Dead, adapted to TV by Frank Darabont. And he also wanted Thomas Jane, who plays the star here, for Rick Grimes, but it just didn't work out. There's a connection.
Did not know that one.
Yeah. The Mist made $57 million worldwide. It has a 72% approval rating based on 142 reviews. Bloody Disgusting ranked the film number 4 on their list of the top 20 horror films of that decade. There was a 10-episode series adaptation on Spike TV, but it only lasted one season because you don't need a TV show when you got this damn movie. That's my first pick, The Mist. Number 2 is Misery.
Well, it's brilliantly written, but then everything you write is brilliant.
Pretty rough stuff.
The swearing, Paul. There, I said it.
The profanity bothers you.
It has no nobility.
These are slum kids. I was a slum kid. Everybody talks like that.
They do not? What do you think I say when I go to the feed store in town? Oh, now, Wally, give me a bag of that effing pig feed and 10 pounds of that bitchly cow corn. And in the bank, do I tell Mrs. Bollinger, oh, here's one big bastard of a check. Give me some of your Christing money. There, look there. See what you made me do. Oh, Paul, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
James Caan stars as famous author of Victorian romance novels, Paul Sheldon, and his books feature a character named Misery Chastain. I almost said mystery, but it's I'm stuck on mist. Misery Chastain. While traveling from Colorado back home to New York, Sheldon is caught in a blizzard and his car crashes, leaving him unconscious. He wakes up in the home of Nurse Annie Wilkes, played with Optimal Crazy by Kathy Bates, who won an Oscar and a Golden Globe for this role. Annie reads his latest book and becomes enraged that he kills the main character. Therefore, she kidnaps him and forces him to write a new book, at one point even smashing his ankles to ensure he can't leave. In the original, and anybody who's ever dated crazy knows this is always a possibility. In the original novel, yep. Annie Wilkes severs one of Paul Sheldon's feet with an axe. Goldman loved the scene and argued for it to be included, but Rob Reiner, the director, insisted that it be changed so that she only breaks his ankles. Goldman subsequently wrote this was the correct decision as amputation would have been too severe. Rob Reiner also has a couple movies here, because he has Stand By Me as well, studied Alfred Hitchcock movies to figure out how to shoot a thriller, watching every Hitchcock film. Reiner had Hitchcock on the brain so much that James Caan overheard Reiner chastising himself on set one day, asking himself, "Who do you think you are? Alfred Hitchcock?" The answer is no, because he's the greatest director of all time. After refusing to speak about his motivations for writing Misery for two decades, Stephen King finally came out and stated that it is indeed about his battle with substance abuse. Kathy Bates' character is a representation of his dependency on drugs and what it did to his body, making him feel alone and separated from everything, while hobbling any attempts he made at escape.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
A lot deeper than people thought.
He did drugs?
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
That's a whole other podcast. On Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an 89% rating based on 66 reviews. It made $61 million domestic. Annie Wilkes was ranked number 17 on AFI's 100 Years, One of Villains and Heroes. So the top 100 heroes and villains list. Not too shabby. Now, those are my two picks, Misery and The Mist. Amanda, you keep, you're across from me and you keep shaking your head.
I hate The Mist. Like, I thought it was a terrible movie. It's not. I respect the ending and I like that choice, but everything else about the movie, aside from Andre Brower, I didn't realize he was, because I just recently watched this. This is one of the few movies that I hadn't seen that I needed to fix. And wow, I really wanted that movie to end. I was ready to go out and let the creatures take me. So I didn't like it at all.
As you can hear, we don't care about your opinion, and we want you to understand that The Mist is a great movie, and we're sorry you can't understand the greatness.
Okay, wrong.
Is it above you? Is it just like you don't get it?
No, I get it. I get it fine.
I don't think you get it.
Also, just in case anybody's wondering.
It's a mist, and there are monsters in it.
The mist. Really, I love the concept.
But really, the monsters are in the grocery store.
I love the concept. Did not like the execution.
Did you like Stranger Things?
I haven't finished it. I'm still in season one.
I guess it explains a lot then.
I love the concept.
What was that noise that John just made? Because I really wanted
I'm so exasperated by the fact that she hasn't finished even being caught up with Stranger. Okay, she's got to go.
We have talked about this, Johnny.
You've had plenty of time to catch up since we talked about it last.
Oh,
anyway,
my gosh.
Go ahead.
Before we go on the cruise, I will watch it.
What's your vote?
Misery. Because Kathy Bates is spectacular, creeps me out, and the movie is well executed, unlike The Mist. And also, if you try to sue your neighbor for a tree falling on your house, your insurance company is going to tell you that is your responsibility because it fell on your house. Okay. Nobody else's insurance is going to cover that, so don't have a 50-minute conversation about it. Let it go.
You get hung up on some weird stuff. Troy, Troy, what is your pick?
Well, let me tell you, Misery is a movie, and Kathy Bates is amazing, just absolutely amazing in it. She just knocks it out of the park. But if Kathy Bates is not in that movie is boring as all get out.
Well, it's a good thing she's in this movie.
It is a giant snooze fest, and no one cares about stupid authors laying in a bed, because when you have giant killer bees, spiders exploding other spiders, tentacle monsters, pterodactyls cracking in windows, all kinds of other amazing fun things going on, and then you add Frank's ending to the movie, The Mist is the best movie from a Stephen King adaptation that actually changes it enough that actually makes it 100 times better. So The Mist, all the way.
I bet you that screenplay probably looks great on paper.
You already had your say, all right? You shush. John, what's your vote? You decide.
Wow, this is really tough. No, it's not. The Mist.
Is that just in spite of Stranger Things?
Yes and no. The Mist is a wonderful, fun, scary, and intense movie. And the whole idea of these monsters that can, like, you don't really see very well and they just jump out. Yeah, all those things make it just a better movie. Then you got Thomas Jane, who... If it's got Thomas Jane in it, I'm going to usually try to side with him because I don't know what happened to his career. He should have had one. Aww. I don't know where it went. So anytime we have a chance to actually vote for Thomas Jane, I'll do it. And finally, Troy said it the best when it came to Misery. Without Kathy Bates, that movie does not work.
Well, it's a good thing she's in the movie that we're discussing.
Well, it doesn't matter because the mist moves on. Now we go to Ho South. John, you get them first. What are your two picks?
My very first movie I'm going to present to you, my favorite panel in the whole wide world, is The Green Mile.
I'm tired, boss. Tired of being on the road, lonely as a sparrow in the rain. I'm tired of never having me a buddy to be with, to tell me where we's going to, coming from, or why. Mostly I'm tired of people being ugly to each other. I'm tired of all the pain I feel and hear in the world every day. There's too much of it. It's like pieces of glass in my head all the time. Can you understand?
Yes, John.
Released in the ripe old time of 1999, a scrappy writer-director looking to make a name for himself tackled this mountain of a movie. That scrappy writer-director is Frank Darabont. We have mentioned him before, but here he is again. Is this his first time tackling this sort of subject matter? No, it's actually his second time dealing with both Stephen King and a prison, because we're going to talk about that other one later. This time, there's magic, though, and arguably, because of that magic, it makes this movie better. It has a lot more heart. It has a lot more going for it. The film stars Tom Hanks, James Cromwell, Bonnie Hunt, and David Morse. All these people are titans in their own right. However, we're introduced to the lighter side of Michael Clark Duncan, who just showed us how much heart he can show and bring in a movie, and with this wonderful character that he played of Mr. Coffee. It also proved that even way back when, someone as unknown as Sam Rockwell can still make anything that he does a little better just by being him. The story of The Green Mile is one of hope. It touches the heart and it oozes magic, and that's why it's my first choice. Okay. My second choice is 2017's It.
Hiya, Georgie. What a nice boat. Do you want it back?
Yes, please.
You look like a nice boy. I bet you have a lot of friends.
Three, but my brother's my best S.
Where is he?
In bed, sick.
I bet I could cheer him up. I'll give him a balloon. Do you want a balloon too, Georgie?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers.
Oh, well, I'm Pennywise the Dancing Clown. Pennywise? Yes, meet Georgie. Georgie, meet Pennywise. Now we aren't strangers, are we?
With even less credits to his name than Frank Darabont had, Andy Muschietti, what a great name for a director, was tasked with not only working with a Stephen King novel, but also bringing up something that is long loved and has already been done once before in a movie form, or actually a miniseries form, back in the 1990s. Actually helped draw a lot of ire from that wicked beast, the internet, that we all know about. It starred Tim Curry as the memorable Pennywise, and it was something that was just fascinating to watch and terrifying. So how does this movie fill those big-ass clown shoes? Well, they found a way to take a story that we all know and love and still found a way to scare us. Complaints of the recasting did not actually hold any water because the cast was fascinating, fun, and scary to watch. This creative team managed to take a story that we all knew and found a new way to scare us. And it was executed in a way that taught people that we can actually remake these stories. And so with that, I'm going to go to Aaron. Which one of these two movies do you like the best?
Green Mile and It. It, I thought, was a great adaptation of the book. It was probably one of the best horror adaptations of any Stephen King novel. That said, The Green Mile is a movie I've watched over and over and over again, and it moves me every time I watch it. Sam Rockwell is fantastic. Michael Clark Duncan is fantastic. It feels like it almost feels like I'm there in that movie. It feels like I'm going through the same experiences that they are, and every time I put it on, I can't turn it off. Whereas It, I like it, but I just don't have the emotional connection. So I'm going to go with The Green Mile. Green Mile hits me a lot more than It does.
Okay. Troy?
That's a tough call for me, because the Green Mile is everything that Aaron said that it is. The only problem is that it is like a fundamental Stephen King property, whether it's the book, whether it's the TV miniseries, whether it's this movie. And yes, technically it's only half of the movie because there's part two still coming out this year, but it had gotten so many things right in this, I guess you call it a remake of the miniseries, but it's its own movie in its own regard. I mean, it includes Maturin inside of there with a giant Lego turtle. So it pulls on some of the amazing things from the book. It has the orgy scene, if you will, without the orgy, but they get the concept of the orgy scene where they're all banding together to have their powers. Mm-hmm. And the way they leave the circle at the end of the movie is actually very significant when you tie it back to the book in particular. So where I think The Green Mile is a great movie and I enjoy watching it and I get the feels and everything from it and I love the little mouse, I think from a Stephen King perspective, I think it is a better movie because I enjoyed it. I saw a giant fat man throw a bucket of popcorn up in the air during the clown scene in the house. So when the popcorn bucket obstructs your view, I think you're in the right place. So I would have to go with it, unfortunately, over The Green Mile.
Well, it's no unfortunate. These are both great picks. I mean,
so I get to be the tiebreaker.
You get to decide.
Yay.
Yeah, because making decisions is what you love to do.
Right? She's so good at
I'm
it.
I'm excellent.
She picked two.
Yeah, right? Can I move them both to the next round? So I do love this version of it. I agree that it was creepy. The dialogue was amazing. It was super funny. But Green Mile is something that was so unique, and I like that it plays on stereotypes and social commentary, but also has a lot of heart in it. And we all know I'm a sap for some heart in my movies. I like to cry. Green Mile is something that stands up time after time that I want to go back and revisit. It is something that I don't mind revisiting, but I don't need to revisit. I'm going with Green Mile.
All right. Green Mile moves on. Troy, you get the last two to present before we move into the semifinals. So what are your two Stephen King adaptations?
Well, I am going to go with the one that's kind of started it all, first and foremost, and that is The Shining.
I think maybe he should be taken to a doctor.
You think maybe he should be taken to a doctor? When do you think maybe he should be taken to a doctor?
As soon as possible.
As soon as possible.
Jack.
You believe his health might be at stake?
Yes.
You are concerned about him.
Yes.
And are you concerned about me?
Of course I am.
Of course you are.
Now, this movie is a series of mysteries that are all connected to each other. It's not a perfect movie. It's an amazing mystery. We'll put it that way. It's a great Stanley Kubrick film. It is not a Stephen King film. So just keep that for what it's worth.
You're like anti-selling this.
but no, it's a really great, amazing mystery. And I would have to argue with Aaron that The Mist is a good horror, but it's not really a horror. It's like an action. The Mist is an action flick with some, what do you want to call it, cerebral context to it. I think that The Shining is a pure horror film. It blurs the line between sanity and insanity. And until the last act, there's actually two explanations of going on the entire time. Either he's going insane from cabin fever, or he's completely having a mental breakdown when he goes and attacks his family. And we don't even know what the hell's going on until you get to the very last part of it. You know, is he being corrupted by these evil spirits that inhabit the hotel? And when the truth is finally revealed in the last part of the movie, it's not even explained why the ghosts are doing what they're doing in the first place. Very little is answered, and you're left completely wondering why this all happened in the first place. And I think that's an amazing thing for the movie. I mean, it sticks, and it makes you wonder, and it makes you walk away and go, huh. And then you kind of watch it a couple more times. Plus, there's tons of the shout-outs and hidden messages from King properties in the movie. Fans have actually mapped out the entire maze and the layout of the mansion. They're basically trying to illustrate all of the theories that are out there. And the opening scene from the movie even features a certain car familiar to King fans. And, of course, you can't forget Room 237, because 237 is a very prominent number in Stephen King lore. Now, What I thought was fascinating, though, is that in tribute to the film, the makers of Toy Story actually made the carpet in Sid's house. If you look at the carpet, it's the same carpet from the carpet hallway scene in The Shining. And in fact, Lee Unkrich, who was part of Toy Story 3, the director, he actually runs a website dedicated to The Shining film.
Oh, wow. That's a fun fact.
I like this carpet thing. That's a fun fact.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Stephen King said that the title was inspired actually by John Lennon's Instant Karma, which actually features the line in the song, "We All Shine On," which is where the shining comes from. And Danny is one of the kids known to have the shine, this special psychic power to kind of see the other universes inside of the Dark Tower, kind of levels and mechanisms inside of the King universe. And Jake actually has the shine in the Dark Tower series, and they talk about Danny actually in the Dark Tower itself. So there's a lot of connections there. The heat that they actually generate from the lighting used to recreate the window sunlight inside of the hotel, the lounge set actually caught on fire and burnt down. And I pulled this one just for Aaron because when that got rebuilt as part of the L Street Studios, that has actually got a higher ceiling now and was used as the snake-filled tomb in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Get out of here. That's cool. Yeah,
totally.
Something good came from that movie.
Oh, boy.
The Shining is also in the Guinness Book of World Records for the most retakes of a single scene, with 127 takes for the scene with Shelley Duvall.
Well, and you want to narrow that down? I mean, she's in the movie a lot. Do you know which scene?
I can't remember which one it was in particular, but it technically it took a lot to get that scene correct.
Okay.
With 127 takes. And the MPAA did not allow blood to be shown in any trailers that would be seen by all ages. And Kubrick persuaded them that the blood was rusty water and got the trailer passed.
Oh, wow.
That's funny.
Shining sits at 52 on IMDb's top 250 with a Metascore of 63. That is The Shining. My second movie is The Shawshank Redemption.
Randy Dufresne.
Wife-killing banker. Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you ask.
You gonna fit right in. Everybody in here is innocent, and you know that? Heywood, what you in here for?
Didn't do it.
Rumor has it you're a real cold fish. You think your shit smells sweeter than most. Is that right?
What do you think?
I'll tell you the truth. I hadn't made up my mind.
I understand you're a man that knows how to get things.
I'm known to locate certain things from time to time.
I wonder if you might get me a rock hammer.
A what?
A rock hammer.
Now, Shawshank is interesting because there is no way in hell this will lose to The Green Mile because stupid freaking Tom Hanks stole the Oscar from The Shawshank Redemption in the 1995 ceremony for films released in 1994. It was highway robbery that The Shawshank Redemption lost. I can understand why, because it was considered a box office flop, only bringing in $18 million for the $25 million budget. However, because of the Oscar nomination, that's when The Shawshank Redemption really began to shine, and then was picked up by Turner Classic and the Turner Corporation, and has literally aired on cable almost every day since then on TNT, TBS, or the like. The Shawshank actually takes place over a 30-year period in the books, and it's only about 10 to 15 in the movie, where Andy Dufresne is a banker, accountant, and he basically gets locked up in jail for a crime he didn't commit. He got framed for the crime, and he ends up meeting this guy named Red inside of Shawshank, where he becomes best friends with him, played by Morgan Freeman. Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman are just amazing in this movie. The things you learn in this movie are fantastic. The feels you get in this movie are fantastic. Everything about this movie is awesome. To this day, when The Marriage of Figaro plays anywhere, I cry because of that scene when they play the opera lady singing inside the yard, because of Shawshank Redemption. In fact, the Shawshank Redemption is so prominent that people that are living in corporate America at their jobs for more than 10 years actually refer to their term at their companies as being Brooks'd, because they have been institutionalized in their jobs because they can't work anywhere else because they don't know how to do anything else. That's how iconic this has been. Waze, the app, actually had Morgan Freeman do voices for the Waze app. And when you had to turn left or turn right, it actually said, "Get busy turning or get busy dying."
That's awesome. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Morgan Freeman's son also posed for the mugshot that you see when they stamp his papers to be paroled. Morgan Freeman himself, actually, when he pitches the baseball, when he meets Andy for the first time in the movie, Morgan Freeman actually threw that baseball for 9 hours straight.
No.
Literally dislocated his arm and had to wear a sling the next day.
Wow.
The sewer sludge inside of that 500 yards of vial and whatever else he had to crawl through, the length of 5 football fields, that was actually chocolate, if you can believe it. Chocolate, syrup, sawdust, and water. And even to this day, the pipes still smell like chocolate and cocoa today.
Oh, so that's cool. So if you're escaping, it smells delicious.
Exactly. We also have the number 237 showing up again here in the movie. For instance, it's the number on Red's cell specifically. And the digits are also Andy's prison ID number. And the number, of course, continues on, as I mentioned, in other places, including the room in The Shining. And the sound of the warden actually shooting himself is the same sound effect that they used for the man stamping approved on Red's parole paper.
Oh, wow. Cool facts, man. You're finding some cool, fun facts.
The other big thing that you want to know about this is that the TV show Castle Rock on Hulu, which aired last summer, actually was all based on a lot of the things that happened in Shawshank Redemption, to the fact that they actually had a scene where you got to see the warden's office, and the bullet hole is in exactly the same place in Castle Rock as it was from where the warden shot himself from the movie. So that was a cool little tie-in. The big thing, though, is that in 2015, the United States Library of Congress selected the film for preservation in the National Film Registry, finding it culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. And FYI, it is number one on the IMDb Top 250, beating out The Godfather in 2008 and holding that spot ever since. The other movies in that top five are, of course, The Dark Knight, Godfather 2, and Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Wow.
Wait, Return of the King is the top Lord of the Rings one?
Return of the King is the top in the top five of the top 250 on IMDb.
Wow.
But most importantly, be excited that it was Raquel Welch in the movie, because in the book, the poster is actually Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah, that's a good change.
That would have been bad.
Yeah.
So regardless of what Peter Griffin from Family Guy says about the Raquel Welch poster, because I can completely debunk how you can tie that down and make it taut enough in order for the rock to go through.
No, you can't. It's a good theory. It's a good point.
Loops. It's tape loops. And you just use your fingers and pull. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
I don't think that's how it works.
Anyways, we're going to go to Johnny first to vote on whether or not Shawshank can clearly beat out The Shining.
Was there another movie that you mentioned besides Shawshank?
I don't think so. I mean, he said The Shining, but it didn't feel like he said The Shining. More like, I got words, Shawshank.
Right. All right. So it's not going to be very hard to discern where my vote's going to go. So let me just say, a few years ago, I finally sat down and watched The Shining because I had heard from so many people who love movies how amazing and fantastic that movie was. It's not. It's not at all. I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't a good time for me, and I want my money back. Somehow I own it too, so that's disappointing now. So that's why I'm going to say Shawshank.
Amanda, let's go to you.
This may surprise you. Fun fact, The Shining is actually taught in almost every single one of my film classes that I've taken from both my associates and my bachelor's. Mm-hmm. So obviously, film professors and the dean of film who creates this catalog of films that they feel we need to see, some of the best movies, a lot of which are Hitchcock. And The Shining. Shawshank was never in the lists. Sad times. That's where my vote goes, is Shawshank. Because, like, The Shining is good from a film.
Well, that took a turn.
Right?
Well, I was confused for a minute. I was like, whoa. I was like, holding on.
I kind of wanted you guys to think that I was going with The Shining for a second.
Oh, well, nice job.
I do like the movie. I don't hate it like you guys do. There's a lot of good potential in it. But the thing that bothers me the most about it is how much Stephen King did not like that adaptation.
It's one of the few movies of his that he actively admits he does not like.
Adamantly said that there was some parts that were creepy, but even down to Nicholson, that is not the person who is supposed to play the character, because you were supposed to wonder about his sanity and his
Yeah, there's no
mania.
Debate. There's zero debate.
His grin is just something else. But I mean, I still like the movie for what it is. But as a Stephen King movie, I mean, that loses points there. And Shawshank is one of the best movies ever made.
All right. Well, I guess that leaves me. I hate The Shining. I am not. Yep. I mean, those professors are dicks. I don't like them at all. And I don't think they should be teaching film history. It's one of those movies where everybody loves to argue with me and tell me how wrong I am. But let me tell you, I've watched it 4 times in my lifetime. 3 of them are because I wanted to reevaluate if I had changed my opinion over time. Because the first time I saw it, I was a kid. Then I saw it again in my 20s and 30s. And, you know, I'm obviously 31. Here's what I've come to surmise. I can't understand what people like about it. Yes, I agree 100% with Stephen King. It is not at all connected to his book. It's very different from his book. If you read his book, it's much more about alcoholism and addiction and losing oneself amongst that. This is more about man goes crazy at cabin. That's really what this movie is.
Right.
And the reason why I don't like it is probably the same reason everybody else loves it. I think Jack Nicholson sucks here. And sucks isn't a great... he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. I love Jack. He's one of my favorite actors of all time. Camp fever. The whole movie. Everybody else feels like they're in a scary-ass horror movie, terrified of everything. And he looks like he is just cheesing out and having the campiest time ever. There's not the Here's Johnny moment, I laugh out loud every time I've ever seen it because there's nothing scary about that. It's just ridiculous. It's him being campy and it doesn't fit the movie. So I can't stand that movie. Shawshank, great movie. It's an easy vote for me. Like I didn't even weigh it.
And his name's not even Johnny in the movie.
No.
That's dumb.
It's just a, hey, look at this connection to Johnny Carson. Haha. Yeah, that's funny.
It's a great film. It's a horrible movie.
No, I think it's a bad film. I don't like The Shining at all. I just don't like it as a movie. Everybody always thinks it's just because of the adaptation point of it. It's not. I don't like it as a movie. Jack Nicholson, I feel like, is way too campy for that movie. And most people just hate on me left and right for it. But that is my opinion, and I'm going to stick to it.
Is there anything else in the movie that you don't like? You've mentioned Jack Nicholson and how it was adapted.
I am not a Kubrick fan. I feel like he drags things out and stretches them way too far. That happens in this movie. It's really more about Jack Nicholson's performance, though. That's my biggest problem with that movie. It just doesn't fit everything else that happens. There you go.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Shawshank was going on anyway.
It's true. So now we come to the semifinals. You don't have to give such detailed answers, but you can give a vote if you want, and we'll use the listener picks if we have to settle any ties. So let's go to Amanda. First, you have Stand By Me versus The Mist.
Stand By Me.
Oh. Okay. That was easy. Now we go to John. John might be a little bit harder here, huh?
Well, both of these movies are great and fantastic, and they have their places in the annals of the canon of which we are discussing here. The Mist.
Okay, now it's up to Troy. Troy, you're going between Stand By Me and The Mist.
Man, that's tough. That is super tough.
Well, you get a vote, too.
I know.
Oh, well, you said Troy gets to decide.
Oh, that's right. You don't get to decide, but you get a vote. You could decide. No, actually, no,
I
you
could decide.
You couldn't, actually.
Because we have
it's 1-1 so far.
Yeah.
I can't count, man.
Aaron, I can't pick between those two. That's tough.
Well, you're going to have to at some point,
Amanda. You have to pick. Okay.
So the ending makes The Mist, right? If it wasn't for the ending, The Mist is not that great of a movie. Stand By Me is a good movie. You grow up on it. Everybody watches it. The puking scene is awesome. The leeches scene is awesome.
The leeches were real.
The leeches were real. Yeah. So, gosh. But the ending is so good in The Mist.
But not the whole movie.
I disagree.
I gotta go to The Mist.
What?
What do I do?
Well, it's still not gonna win number one.
What do I do? The Mist versus... I can decide this, and I will. The Mist. I like The Mist so much more than Stand By Me. Oh, we've got our first surprise. Now, let's go to the South and see what we got. The Mist moves on to the finals. Movies. We have
it's the cage fight.
Green Mile versus Shawshank Redemption. Let's start with John this time. What do you got?
This is a really tough call. It honestly is a tough call, but I'm gonna do what I don't do all that often, and I'm gonna vote for my movie just because it has magic, which is The Green Mile.
All right, Troy.
Well, Frank did both movies, and Frank wouldn't have been able to do the second movie without doing the first movie first. And the fact that it's like number one by everybody's regard in the world, pretty much. Shawshank has to go ahead to The Green Mile because it's not losing the freaking Tom Hanks again.
Yeah, I don't care what IMDb says. Amanda?
Shawshank!
Ooh. Well, I'm going with Green Mile.
Well, what are the listeners going
we
with?
We have a tie. Yes, we do. And I'm with John. It has nothing to do with it being your movie. I just think The Green Mile is a better movie than Shawshank Redemption.
You're high.
Mm-hmm. No, I get so much emotion from Green Mile, man.
I get so much emotion from Shawshank. The N, the letter, the island. Come on.
None of that hits me as hard as I'm just so tired of this world, boss. I'm just tired.
Yeah.
People being mean to each other. I'm just tired. I'm going to watch The Green Mile. This is done. All right. So now we move on to the listeners, because we have to decide for this one, because we have a tie. We have Green Mile versus Shawshank. The listeners have, well, it's not close. The Shawshank Redemption is beating The Green Mile. Well, actually, it is kind of close. It's number, yeah. So Shawshank moves on.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we have, honestly, to me, it's an easier one. The Mist versus Shawshank Redemption. And I think, Troy, you get to go first this time.
Right. I think at this point, do we have to go based on like closest adaptation to the works, or just straight on the movie?
It doesn't change anything. It is the best movie.
How we've been voting all along.
Yeah, it's how we've been voting all along. So whatever you, it's your vote. Whatever you think is the best Stephen King movie, go. Of those two, The Mist versus Shawshank.
And that's two Franks again.
Mm-hmm. Frank, I called it early.
It's same logic applies. He doesn't get to do the others unless he gets Shawshank first. So Shawshank gets my vote.
It's a weird way to vote, but okay.
Even though the ending is really good.
I'm going to go next because I've been going last, I think. So The Mist. The Mist by a mile, actually. I enjoy The Mist so much more.
That's a close vote. That's not easy, even though you think it is. It's not easy.
I enjoy the entire movie, not just the ending. The entire movie. I love it. Amanda?
Shawshank.
John?
I am going to have to go with the one that I've seen the most, because I love The Mist and I think it's a fantastic movie, but I keep on, I'll rewatch Shawshank any given chance.
What
up, bitches?
I feel like we just wasted an hour. Can I just say, I find Shawshank to be a great movie, but can you overrate a movie that is great? Because I feel like it's still overrated, even though I do love it. You know what I mean?
I don't think it's overrated.
Number one movie out of 250? Are you kidding
me? Somebody's got to be number one.
But Shawshank Redemption? I wouldn't even put it in my top 20 of all time.
Well, the
overrated is the wrong term to call it. Maybe you're just so tired of seeing it every single time you go past TBS.
That's possible.
They did a lot of Green Mile, though. They used to do a lot of Green Mile.
They need more Green Mile because it's a better movie.
It's long and it's
second of it is enjoyable. Where Shawshank, I'm like, God, is he out of prison yet? No, Shawshank's a great movie. I don't want to put Shawshank down. Okay, now listener top three from 3-1. It was number 3.
Wow.
I'm actually surprised it's
of
that
2017.
High. Yeah, 2017. We kept TV movies out of it for damn good reason. Number 2 is The Green Mile, and number 1 is The Shawshank Redemption. So it feels like the right movie came out ahead.
So even if Johnny hadn't picked Shawshank and went with The Mist, it would have been 2-2 again, and we would have deferred to listener comments.
But I think it
still would have
won. Fantastic that The Mist came out in the final two.
Don't. I think we have some incorrect thought processes going on here.
Now, here, I got one more question before we close the show out. Okay, guys, ready?
It's not on the format.
It's not on the format, but I told you all about this earlier, so it's your fault if you didn't pay attention.
I hope I read the message.
What is your personal favorite Stephen King adaptation? Whatever your favorite Stephen King movie is. And yes, you pick one. Troy?
100%. It's The Dreamcatcher. I love it. I watch it every time it comes on. Just to see Morgan Freeman
Even Morgan,
not being read.
Even Morgan Freeman says, I hate that movie, with his eyebrows.
His freaking eyebrows, man. They're like giant caterpillars on his face.
Ah, my eyebrows are coming for you. They're the dream catcher.
No, honestly, my favorite adaptation, like the most faithful, is Stand By Me by far. I love Shawshank as a movie, but from King's work perspective, I think Stand By Me is by far the best. I would really love to see Frank Darabont, honestly, though, like really tackle Because of the Mist, and it has the same kind of concepts as Under the Dome. I'd love to see an Under the Dome movie done the right way with Frank at the helm. I think that would be fantastic.
That could be better. Yeah, it could be better.
But yeah, Stand By Me.
John, what's your favorite Stephen King adaptation?
You're going to think that I'm trying to be funny.
Okay.
But it honestly is Dreamcatcher.
Is it really?
Are you trying to be funny?
I don't know.
No, I am actually not trying to be funny. I don't know
for the poop scenes.
I don't know why I love watching that movie so much. I like watching the all the guys getting together, and I love how every one of them have their little magic trick that they can do, and like Thomas Jane talking into the gun like it's a phone because Jonesy is calling him, and you know, I just like, I really like it, and it makes me smile every single time I watch it. I'm not being funny, I swear to God.
Okay, I respect if that's your pick.
You know, it's number 25 on the list of most popular Stephen King movies. Like 25. Cell beats Dreamcatcher.
Hey, you know what? Whatever but makes I
respect,
John happy.
You know what? No, that's what I was going to say next. I respect that you have such a bold decision here.
I am sending you a Christmas present with an I done it's t-shirt now.
I done it. Oh my God. Don't.
I done it.
Don't
tease me.
Yeah.
I done it. Amanda, what's your
I favorite? Will wear the shit out of that t-shirt.
He'll wear it to Christmas dinner. He'll wear it to birthdays, parties. He don't care. I done it.
He looks like done it.
One worm, ill world.
Amanda, what's your favorite?
Shawshank.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do really love Stand By Me, and Troy had a really good point with it. And I'm actually reading The Body right now. But when
it's very close.
When I first bought it, I had no idea that was what it was. I figured the book had the same name, but they had to change it because they said it sounded kind of creepy.
The funny thing is that you're still reading it. It's like 80 pages in a PDF. You can do it in like an hour.
No, I didn't start reading it when I bought it. I just picked it up because I have this problem whenever I go past the book aisle at my local store. I buy a book that I don't need to buy. And I saw that one. I was like, oh, that's a really cool cover. I like that. And it's Stephen King. I'm going to give it a shot.
Four Seasons? Or is it actually in a novella? It's like in a pamphlet form.
It's like a paperback book.
Well, that's a small paperback because that's a no short doubt. Book.
It's like, yeah, it's okay. About that thick.
Big letters.
She said it's about that thick for the radio.
A huge font.
What is that, like an inch and a half? An inch?
It's radio. Nobody can see your fingers. You. Yeah, that looks like an inch. That's what I tell my girlfriends.
Your wife will be so pleased to hear that.
All right. So
she doesn't listen to the podcast.
That's true. My favorite is, and I'm not trying to make a joke, it's Stephen King's Silver Bullet. I don't know if you guys were
saying. Ooh, yeah.
Good call.
That's my favorite.
I actually just rewatched that 3 weeks ago.
Did you really?
It's on Amazon Prime. I sat down and I watched that.
Man, I watch it at least once a year. I'm not kidding. At least once a year.
I saw it for
that the first. That has the fine distinction of having one of the second best werewolves ever put to film.
I'm telling you. And the ending is intense, even though it looks like shit now, but it's still really intense, really intense. Just.
I can't feel my legs.
I saw it for the first time. What was it, like 2 Halloweens ago? 2 or 3, something like that. And when I first started watching it, I was like, there's no way this is going to be a good movie. Like, I thought it was going to be really cheesy and over the top, but I actually really liked it. And it's totally your kind of movie, Aaron, because you love werewolves.
I do.
Love them.
Let's play Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew chase down the fucking werewolf. Gary Busey's great in that movie.
There is a really, I like, there's one scene stands out to me. They go into like this, what is it, like a barn? Or mm-hmm. something, he chases, it goes into the barn with him, and that was a cool scene. I liked that.
Yeah, it's an intense movie. It's a lot better than people would give it credit for. A lot of people don't even know what it is. All right, any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about? Troy, you're a guest. Is there anything that you saw recently you want to mention before we close the show out?
I can't remember what the name of it was called. It was 7 Days Until, or 7 Days...
Well, that's
7
helpful.
Days 2. It's on Netflix. But it's 7 days. If you just search for 7 days, you'll find it. It's like 8 little mini kind of documentaries about the week leading up to some big event. And one of them is the satellite going by Saturn. One of them is leading up to the giant world championship for League of Legends, the video game thing. Mm. It's the 7 days before the Kentucky Derby race.
Oh, okay. I know which one you're talking about.
It's called 7 days out.
7 days out. That's it. 7 days out on Netflix. Watched like 3 of those last night. Just fun, quick, easy watches. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So yeah, check that out. 7 days out on Netflix.
He said 7 days out, 7 days, and I'm thinking The Ring. I'm like, did it go like 7 days? Did you get a call? John, what about you? Anything?
Nothing that we haven't talked about. I just can't tell you enough that people need to go see Shazam. Please go see Shazam. It is so much fun.
Amanda, anything?
That was literally going to be my comment.
Literally.
I was going to say, if you watch anything,
in a baritone voice, the guys, everybody.
It should be Shazam.
Is that deep?
No.
Okay. No. But it sounds deep in my ears.
Not at all. I finally saw Triple Frontier on Netflix.
I did not like that.
Yeah?
Yeah, it wasn't as good as I thought it could have been. And also, there's an a-hole on the internet somewhere who purposely spoiled that movie for me.
Oh.
Yeah, like big time. I told John, I don't want to say it on here because it's a huge spoiler. But let's just say I just made a comment that I personally really, really love an actor in a certain role. And this person had to comment with an exact spoiler for what happens to that character in this movie. Yeah, it's pretty intense. So I was, you know, so even with that, it didn't detract from the movie itself. I just felt like it could have been a little better. It felt kind of by the numbers.
The beginning was so weak.
Yeah, it just, yeah. But I enjoyed it. I haven't watched anything else, really. Reuben McDade, we did receive your email. We're saving it for next week, so we'll come back for that.
I did make it halfway through The Unicorn Store as well with Brie Larson.
Did you like that? I told Johnny I think that would be up his alley.
Halfway through? Did you get halfway and you're like, nope, I'm done. This is too much like the horse and Neverending Story. It's drowning.
I got to the part where she finally hooks up with Samuel L. Jackson, because that's really what I was watching it for. Was like,
she hooks up with Samuel L. Jackson? That could be awkward.
They have been working together a lot.
I mean, it's nostalgic. If you're into the Care Bear, Rainbow Bright stuff from back in the 80s, it's okay. It wasn't as good as I thought it would be. That's why I only got halfway through and switched over to 7 days out.
No, I understand. Unicorn. That's how Nick Fury lost his eye. She's a unicorn. Jeez.
That suddenly made Captain Marvel a better movie.
I am so, on a side note about Captain Marvel, there's an article from a legit film website that's like explaining why Brie Larson is wearing more makeup in Endgame than she was in Captain Marvel.
There's an article?
An entire article about this. What was the name of it? It was like a reputable site.
To be fair, there's an article about everything that has to do with Endgame.
I don't care why she's wearing more makeup. And the reason she's wearing more makeup is because she's like 20 years out now. Everybody, like, come on. You change as you get older. Who cares?
That'd be exactly my point. It's like, 20 years later. She has to age up.
Right.
Can I just ask, where's she getting the makeup if she's been in the cosmos for a while? Like, do they have makeup out there?
The same place that everyone in Guardians of the Galaxy got their makeup
from their makeup artist.
She gets the makeup when she gets back to the States, because she doesn't have any makeup when she gets the stinger at the end of Captain Marvel.
No, this is really something we need to figure out. Where are all these characters getting their makeup from? Is there an Avon lady in space?
She's like out there waving. Would you like to buy some lipstick?
Because Marvel keeps spinning off their franchises. Make that movie, because I will buy tickets to find out Avon in space. I would watch that movie.
Sounds like something on Cinemax or something.
Like, you just see some poor lady going door to space door.
Ooh, a competition between Mary Kay and Avon as they try to sell.
Oh, Mary Kay is evil.
Why is Mary Kay the evil one?
I don't know. Because she has pink cars. Down. She is going downtown. All right. Find our Facebook group. We're also on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you're even still here listening, subscribe via Spotify or your preferred podcast app. And you can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows, and me on my other podcast, Smirk and the Blacklist Exposed, with Troy Heinrichs. Troy, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I think it's going to do it, guys. This podcast is over.
We out.
Sweet. She held up a peace sign that no one can see, because again, it's a podcast. Amanda has been doing this for a year. You haven't figured out how this works yet. All right. Remember, the next time you head to the theater to see Shazam and not Pet Sematary, buy popcorn.
Shazam! released on Yonder in the rape.
Wow. That made the outtakes.
Mostly, I don't want to have to balance three tracks, and plus, Troy's got some shit going on. I don't want to have to figure it out later.
Right. I'll record it anyway, though, just to see if it'll actually work.
You sound weird.
Yeah, you did sound a little weird there for a second.
You sound very muffled.
Well, he was sucking his mic. He was real up close to his mic there. Yeah. Back up, Slim.
Back up, son.
He's going to be in that 5D Amsterdam recording studio.
Troy wants to get all up in that 5D theater. Yeah. Give me a water cannon, bitch.
That's 5D for five dicks.
Oh, my God. You should have said that. Why didn't you say that joke?
Because I was on the real show, and I can't do that on the real show.
Yes, you can.
It'll probably be in the outtakes, so yes, you can. All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck not, I guess. Let's, you know what?
I have a moment. Heck
of lungs and shit.
Why don't we all just cough like we have leukemia?
I have bronchitis. What is so funny?
What the fuck was that?
That was mid-swallow, fucker.
Why are you...
You guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Ready, Freddy.
Look at him stealing my phrase. He's used it twice today and you haven't said shit to him. Saying it because of this.
Aww.
No, I'm going back.
He's not doing it during the show. He does it to mock you. You know
he
that, right?
He does it in the... He did it in the beginning and just now.
He does it to mock you.
Well, that's great, but he doesn't get yelled at for it.
He's
because I'm mocking you.